Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. Republican National Convention in Milwaukee, this is Democracy Now!
President Trump represents America's last best hope to restore what, if lost, may never be found again. A country where a working-class boy born far from the halls of power can stand on this stage as the next Vice President of the United States of America.
Ohio Senator J.D. Vance formally accepts the Republican vice presidential nomination to run with Donald Trump, the man Vance once described as America's Hitler. In a populist anti-immigrant address, Vance attacked Joe Biden for supporting free trade agreements and the Iraq War. We'll air excerpts of Vance's RNC speech and look at his views on domestic and foreign policy.
Together, we will send our kids to war only when we must. But as President Trump showed with the elimination of ISIS and so much more, when we punch, we're going to punch hard.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. This is War, Peace, and the Presidency, Breaking with Convention. I'm Amy Goodman. President Biden's tested positive for COVID and canceled a campaign speech Wednesday evening as he headed back to Delaware to self-isolate. The White House says Biden has mild symptoms and is being treated with the antiviral drug Paxlovid. Biden was set to address the Unidos U.S. conference in Las Vegas to appeal to Latinx voters. Earlier in the day, an unmasked Biden was seen greeting supporters with close physical contact. Just hours before news of the president's COVID diagnosis went public, Biden made headlines over comments during an interview with BET journalist Ed Gordon.
Is there anything that you would look to, you personally, not anybody else, not other pundits, not even perhaps family members, that you would look to say, if I see that, I will reevaluate?
If there had some medical condition that emerged, if doctors came to me and said, you got this problem, that problem.
Later in the same interview, Biden appeared to forget the name of his Secretary of Defense, Lloyd Austin, referring to him as a black man. Separately on Wednesday, California Congress member and U.S. Senate candidate Adam Schiff publicly called on Biden to, quote, pass the torch. After reports, he told donors privately Biden could cost Democrats the presidency and the Senate if he stays in the race. This comes amidst reports that top Democrats, former House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, and party leaders Chuck Schumer and Hakeem Jeffries have directly expressed concerns to President Biden over his ability to beat Donald Trump. Meanwhile, President Biden has been the subject of backlash this week over comments he made in an interview with journalist Speedy Mormon on Complex, where Biden claimed he was very supportive of Palestinians.
Are you a Zionist?
Yes. Now, you'll be able to make a lot out of it because some people don't know what a Zionist is. Do you know what a Zionist is?
I just ask questions. I don't answer.
By the way, I'm the guy that did more for the Palestinian community than anybody. I'm the guy that opened up all the assets. I'm the guy that made that sure that I got the Egyptians to open the border to let good goods through, medicine and food and...
Biden's comments come as Israel's U.S.-backed war on Gaza has now killed nearly 39,000 Palestinians, according to official data, though the true death toll is certainly much higher. Among those killed was Mohammed Bahar, a 24-year-old Palestinian man from Gaza City. Bahar's mother says her son, who had Down syndrome, was separated from his family before Israeli soldiers unleashed a combat dog on the young man, who was mauled to death as he cried out, "Khalas ya Habibi," meaning, "Enough, my dear." Bahar's mother, who heard his cries through their home's walls, says he was nonverbal and these were the only words his family had ever heard him speak. Meanwhile, the Red Cross warns hospitals in southern Gaza are at a breaking point due to the spike in patients as Israel intensifies its attacks across the territory. Only 10 of 26 UN healthcare facilities in Gaza remain operational. Israeli lawmakers overwhelmingly passed a resolution opposing Palestinian statehood. It's the first time the Knesset has passed such a resolution. Also Wednesday, United Nations Chief Antonio Guterres blamed a surge in illegal Israeli settlement expansions in the occupied West Bank for scuppering a future two-state system, saying, quote, recent developments are driving a stake through the heart of any prospect for a two-state solution, unquote. Meanwhile, Palestine's UN ambassador addressed a Security Council meeting in New York Wednesday where he called for an end to the, quote, most documented genocide in history. This is Riyad Mansour.
There is a global consensus in support of the Palestinian people's right to self-determination and the two-state solution in line with UN resolutions and international law. There is more convergence on the Palestine question than on any other matter on the international agenda. And there is one isolated, fanatic government rejecting this international consensus and attacking every institution entrusted with upholding the international law-based order.
Here in Milwaukee, Ohio Senator J.D. Vance accepted the Republican vice presidential nomination Wednesday as he took to the stage on day three of the Republican National Convention. Vance appealed to the working class and voters in the Rust Belt swing states. Vance touted his Appalachian roots and lashed out at President Biden over his foreign policy record, including Biden's support of NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement, which Vance blamed for exporting thousands of U.S. manufacturing jobs to Mexico, as well as then-Senator Biden's role in the Iraq War, supporting it. Vance is a U.S. Marine veteran who served in Iraq. Vance also promoted tougher policies on China, which he's described as the biggest threat facing the U.S., and blamed Biden for skyrocketing inflation. Vance was introduced by his wife, Usha Vance, the daughter of Indian immigrants. Much of the RNC is centered on anti-immigrant hate speech and policies. Among the other speakers yesterday were Donald Trump Jr., Texas Governor Greg Abbott, and former Trump advisor Peter Navarro, who was released from a Miami federal prison earlier in the day before flying to Milwaukee to give his speech. Navarro served 4 months in prison for contempt of Congress after he defied a subpoena from the House Select Committee investigating the January 6th insurrection. The Wall Street Journal is under fire after it dismissed Hong Kong-based reporter Selina Chang after she was elected last month as chair of the Hong Kong Journalists Association, Hong Kong's largest media union. The Wall Street Journal claims her firing was due to restructuring. Selina Chang spoke to reporters Wednesday.
At that time, he demanded that I resign from my position in the executive committee of the Journalist Association. I told him that day that I refused, but he said the position in the Journalist Association was incompatible with my position at the Wall Street Journal. He said that employees of the Wall Street Journal should be promoting press freedom in places like Hong Kong. He said this place is not like some Western countries where press freedom has already been established.
The Wall Street Journal is owned by Rupert Murdoch, who is at the Republican National Convention this week. Colombia's government announced it's ending a ceasefire deal with the largest faction of dissident members of FARC, the Revolutionary Armed Forces of Colombia. The long-anticipated agreement had been brokered last year by the government of leftist President Gustavo Petro. This is Colombia's defense minister, Iván Velásquez.
La orden impartida a las fuerzas militares.
Colombia's military forces received the order to carry out offensive operations with full capacity against these organizations, blocks, and fronts that walked away from the generous offer made by the government as it seeks peace.
A ceasefire with a smaller faction of the group will be extended for 3 months as peace negotiations continue. In Texas, anger's mounting over continued power outages more than a week after Hurricane Beryl barreled through the Houston area. Harris County officials say at least six heat-related deaths have been reported due to the blackouts. One woman was found dead in her home Tuesday, a day when the heat index reached 110 degrees Fahrenheit. Some 60,000 people still did not have electricity as of Wednesday. The Center for Energy Poverty and Climate released a report this week warning low-income households are particularly vulnerable to intensifying heat waves as 31 states offer no protections against summer power shutoffs when people cannot afford to pay their utility bills. Officials in Afghanistan say torrential rains in the east of Afghanistan have killed at least 47 people and injured hundreds of others in recent days. The International Rescue Committee warned the situation is only likely to get worse and called on international donors to step up, saying, quote, decades of conflict and economic crisis has meant that the country has faced setback after setback as it tries to find its feet, unquote. Wednesday marked the 10th anniversary of the police killing of Eric Garner, who died after an officer held him in a chokehold, which is a banned procedure. The now ex-NYPD officer, Daniel Pantaleo, remains a free man after a jury in the Justice Department declined to charge him for killing Garner. Yesterday, community members joined Eric Garner's mother, daughter, and cousin to march to the site of Garner's killing on a Staten Island street. Eric Garner's pleas of "I can't breathe," captured on video by a witness, became a global rallying cry. And Dr. Bernice Johnson Regan, civil rights activist, scholar, and musician who started the vocal ensemble Sweet Honey and the Rock and co-founded the Freedom Singers and the Harambee Singers, died Tuesday at the age of 81. In the early 1960s, Bernice Johnson Regan performed with the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee's musical group Freedom Singers, bringing liberation songs to marches, jails, and organizing meetings. She joined Democracy Now! In 2008 to celebrate the life and work of another civil rights musical icon, Odetta, and recalled her own musical trajectory.
Sweet Honey in the Rock, which came out of a theater workshop, was going to be a cappella, was going to do songs that came out of the struggles and the stages of life of people on a community-based level, calling people to pay attention to issues that we needed to be addressing as responsible citizens, and that singers, that artists, really had a big role to play in challenging our society and culture to transform itself and to do better. And so absolutely, the Freedom Singers and the Freedom Song in the Civil Rights Movement is formative for me, both as a singer, as a composer, and as a scholar.
Bernice Johnson Regan's daughter, Toshi Regan, also an acclaimed musician, shared the news on social media Wednesday of her mother's death and included a quote from her mother, "I was here before I came, and when I die, I am not leaving." And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, War, Peace, and the Presidency, Breaking with Convention. Coming up, Ohio Senator J.D. Vance formally accepts a Republican vice presidential nomination to run with Donald Trump. Stay with us.
If you see me stumble, don't stand back in the corner.
to Struggle by Bernice Johnson Regan, founder of the Freedom Singers and Sweet Honey in the Rock. She passed away at the age of 81. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, War, Peace, and the Presidency, Breaking with Convention. I'm Amy Goodman.
And I'm Nermeen Sheikh. Welcome to our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world. On Wednesday night, Ohio Senator J.D. Vance formally accepted the Republican vice presidential nomination 2 days after he was picked by Donald Trump, the man Vance once described as America's Hitler. Prior to his embrace of the MAGA movement, Vance was a vocal critic of Trump. He once described Trump as reprehensible, an idiot, and noxious. But in recent years, he shifted to become a leading supporter of Trump. J.D. Vance first gained fame as the author of the best-selling memoir, Hillbilly Elegy, a memoir of a family and culture in crisis, about growing up in Appalachia. The book was also made into a movie. Vance is a graduate of Yale Law School who served in the Marines and became a venture capitalist. He won a close Republican Senate race in 2022, in part thanks to billionaire tech investor Peter Thiel, who spent a record-breaking $10 million to support Vance's campaign. On Wednesday night, Vance was introduced by his wife, Usha Vance, a lawyer who once clerked for Supreme Court Chief Justice John Roberts and future Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh when he was a federal judge. This is part of J.D. Vance's speech at the Republican National Convention on Wednesday night.
Never in my wildest imagination could I have believed that I'd be standing here tonight. I grew up in Middletown, Ohio. A small town where people spoke their minds, built with their hands, and loved their God, their family, their community, and their country with their whole hearts. Amen. But it was also a place that had been cast aside and forgotten by America's ruling class in Washington. When I was in the fourth grade, a career politician by the name of Joe Biden supported NAFTA, a bad trade deal that sent countless good jobs to Mexico. When I was a sophomore in high school, that same career politician named Joe Biden gave China a sweetheart trade deal that destroyed even more good American middle-class manufacturing jobs. When I was a senior in high school, that same Joe Biden supported the disastrous invasion of Iraq, and at each step of the way, in small towns like mine in Ohio or next door in Pennsylvania or Michigan, in states all across our country, jobs were sent overseas and our children were sent to war. And
Republican vice presidential nominee J.D. Vance, a senator from Ohio, addressing the Republican National Convention. He has been nominated as the official vice presidential candidate on the Republican ticket, along with President Donald Trump. We're joined right now by two guests. Here in Milwaukee, as we cover the RNC, is Chris Layman, the D.C. bureau chief of The Nation. His new piece is just out today. It's headlined, J.D. Vance's Phony Populism Thrilled the RNC. The rest of us shouldn't be fooled. He also wrote a recent profile headlined, American Hellegy. Trump's VP pick, J.D. Vance, is the perfect soulless vessel for the future of the magnified Republican Party. Joining us in Atlanta is independent journalist Zed Jelani, who has a very different view on Vance. He's written for The Intercept, Think Progress, News Nation, and more. His new piece for Compact Magazine is headlined, Why the Left Gets J.D. Vance Wrong. We welcome you both to Democracy Now! Chris, we're going to begin with you here in Milwaukee. Can you respond to Vance's address last night and who Vance is?
Well, how much time do you have? Vance was a known sort of media quantity because of the wild success of his memoir, which was trotted out in 2016, largely by liberals trying to understand the Trump phenomenon after the election. And Vance, you know, very cannily leveraged his life story into this sort of political parable where the noble heartland working class was betrayed by faceless leaders in Washington. It's a narrative that is, in many ways, valid and true. But what Vance continues to do, and we saw it in the speech last night, he has the locution, the Washington ruling class, which, you know, I'm from Washington, and I certainly do not think highly of the leaders there, but they are not, in fact, the ruling class. The ruling class are the owners of capital. They are people like Peter Thiel, Vance's big tech sponsor, and Vance himself, right, who has worked as a venture capitalist. So there's a very adroit sort of pea going under the shell moment when he talks about the ruling class in Washington. He also, you know, declared from the podium that the GOP is going to be the party of the workers, both union and non-union, which is a very important disclaimer, because the Republican Party is not pro-union. They're trying to posture as the party of the forgotten men and women who are suffering under Biden's economic policies. But in point of fact, they are the party of the owners. They are the party of the bosses. So there's this cultural populism that Vance very effectively embodies that pushes all of those issues to the side and makes the question, you know, are you sort of vibes aligned with the working class? And that spares you the need of having to do much in terms of concrete policy to actually materially improve their lives.
And so, Jelani, if you could talk about your assessment of Vance and his this cultural populism that Chris just mentioned. What does that cultural populism actually consist in, and why does it have the kind of appeal it does?
So I think much of what Chris said was true in terms of describing the broader Republican Party. At least since Ronald Reagan, and probably a little before Ronald Reagan, the Republican Party has been the party largely siding with the, as he said, owners, bosses, capital. I think a lot of what's happened, though, in recent years is a little bit of a door has creaked open a little bit, right, towards something else. I'll give you one example. I think when Donald Trump ran in 2016, he spent a lot of time criticizing American trade policy. I think much of the left responded to that saying, dude, this guy outsources everything that he owns. He doesn't care about unions. He's a fat cat. What is he going to do? But when Trump came into office, he appointed Robert Lighthizer. He renegotiated NAFTA, made it actually considerably more pro-worker. He pulled the United States out of Trans-Pacific Partnership. Now, the other 95% of the stuff that he did, I think, would have been exactly the same as what Jeb Bush would have done or any number of sort of neoliberal Reaganite Republicans. So I don't want to exaggerate the nature of Trump sort of opening the door to populism in the Republican Party. And as Chris said, much of it is cultural as well, right? The Republicans won working class voters by about 4 points in 2020. If you believe the latest New York Times Siena poll, they're going to win the working class by about 23 points in 2024, right? And I think, you know, part of that is a backlash to what happened with inflation, which is not entirely Biden's fault, but it happened to occur under him. But also, I think it's sort of an alignment with cultural values, right? The working class people tend to be more skeptical towards immigration. I think they're a little bit more skeptical towards some of the cultural turns in the country on issues like transgender rights. And, you know, I think really the main cultural issue where Democrats have the advantage now is abortion. And I think it was notable last night that J.D. Vance, despite being very pro-life and suggesting prior that he wanted to ban abortion nationally, never brought the issue up, which is part of the compromises that Vance himself, I think, will have to make now that he's joining a Republican Party led by Donald Trump, right? It's not, he's no longer Senator Vance. Now he will be vice presidential candidate J.D. Vance. But, you know, I think that where I disagree with Chris is that I think we have a cognitive bias. It's called outgroup homogeneity bias, where we tend to see our side as different, diverse. We have many factions. We have many different types of people on our side. But the other side's all the same. And it's a cognitive bias that takes place in politics and social issues and culture and race. And I think the difference with Vance is that I think Vance's view actually has evolved either for opportunistic reasons or for sincerity reasons or probably a mix of both. to where he does see the Republican Party as misguided in many directions. I mean, last night was probably the first vice presidential speech in 40 years in the Republican Party where he never talked about shrinking the size of government. He never talked about cutting taxes, and he never talked about reducing government spending. That is remarkable, right? Vice President Mike Pence would have never given a speech like what J.D. Vance said last night. And, you know, I'm sitting here in Georgia. J.D. Vance is on a bill with my senator, Senator Warnock, to lower the price of insulin, right? He's on bills to claw back excess bank CEO compensation. He's on bills to fight credit card monopolization. He's on bills that deal with issues like railway safety with Sherrod Brown. He has, I think, carved out sort of a third way between Reaganism and progressivism, right? He's not a progressive Democrat. He's never someone who's going to sponsor Medicare for all. He's never going to call for massive tax increases on the rich because I don't think he believes in that kind of redistribution. But I do think that he has started to go from sort of a personal sort of responsibility point of view, which was in Hillbilly Elegy, which I think, honestly, was probably the consequence of his trauma of his childhood, right? He was letting out a lot of his frustrations with his family and his community, to a more sociological analysis, which says, why are all these people addicted to drugs? Why are all these people sort of shifting around without jobs? Mm-hmm. Because the jobs don't exist, right? And I think that he has sort of moved more in that direction. The question is, can he move the entire Republican Party in that direction? I don't think he can right now because the vice president isn't that powerful of a position. But I do think the door is continuing to creak open a little bit, and the Republican Party may moderate a little bit more on some of these worker and family issues and step a little bit further away from Reaganism.
So, Chris, if you could respond to what Zed said, and then I want to comment, I just quote from Vance himself writing in 2016 in The Atlantic, just kind of describing, as Zed mentioned, the circumstances in which he grew up and what he sees as the common thread running through communities who support Trump, what he calls Trump's faithful. In the article, this is 2016 in The Atlantic, he wrote, it was headlined, Opioid of the Masses. Vance wrote, a common thread among Trump's faithful, even among those whose individual circumstances remain unspoiled, is that they hail from broken communities. And overall in this piece, I should say, he kind of denounced Trump's campaign. So if you could talk about that, the kind of support base of Trump, what its origins are, what binds those people, and then also respond to what Zed's comments were.
Yeah, I this may be distressing to you, but I don't actually disagree that much with what Zed just said. I do think I wrote earlier this week that Vance represents a potential future shift in the Republican Party, and you know Trump's selection of him is significant in all sorts of ways. It's a way of you know, the party has been flailing for a while trying to figure out, you know, what the next post-Trump phase of its evolution is going to be. And Trump himself, which is kind of contrary to his character, has settled on Vance as a partial answer to that question. And Zed is right that he does represent, you know, it was striking. There is not only opportunistically no mention of abortion in this speech, but all of these other sort of call-outs to what government should be doing on the part of workers. That is remarkable to hear in the setting of a Republican convention. As to what Vance wrote in 2016, I don't want to go into confessional J.D. Vance myself, but I am also from a dying Rust Belt city, Davenport, Iowa, that used to be the farm implement manufacturing of capital of the world. It's now the riverboat gambling capital of the upper Midwest. And I've seen the fallout from the broken communities that Vance has described in his own work from my hometown. And it is a real thing. You know, the last time I was in Davenport, it was during the holidays, I drove by a billboard sign that said, need Christmas cash, turn in a drug dealer. So that those dynamics are real. And, you know, the Democratic Party does bear a not inconsequential responsibility via all, you know, the neoliberal romance with free trade, the kind of BS line that, you know, you know, manufacturing workers who are out of a job can just learn to code and adapt to the new information economy.